Before we go into this sermon today, which will be given by Mr. Armstrong, it's a tape by Mr. Armstrong on unity, I do have a number of news items that I think it would be worthwhile bringing to everybody. And certainly there's been an awful lot going on in the news over the past couple of weeks, certainly since I've done a news analysis, prophetic news analysis, before. And I think the major thing that seems to have broken is this issue over the cartoons that were put out in a Danish newspaper depicting Muhammad as a terrorist. The interesting thing is that when it was first mentioned, and this gives an idea, really an idea about how really the culture of the West, how different the culture of the West is from the culture that we see within the Middle East and the culture we see within the Muslim people, is that the first time it was mentioned was on page 15 of the Telegraph, and this was back on Tuesday, January the 31st, so the end of last month. It just made the mention, Danes face fury over cartoons of Prophet. A Danish newspaper apologised to Muslims last night after provoking fury in the Arab world by running cartoons featuring the Prophet Muhammad. Now that was, as I say, at the end of last month, and it was a case that it was relegated to the inside pages. And at the same time, on the Saturday, February the 4th, it comes out with another article here. It says, Turkish film of murdering GIs adds fuel to the smouldering anti-US feelings. Again, the West is looking at it as a political thing. It's looking at this particular film that was brought out in Turkey. It says, the most expensive film ever made in Turkey looks like deepening the growing anti-American sentiment triggered by the occupation in Iraq. Scenes include gum-chewing, wild-eyed American soldiers raiding a wedding party in Iraq for sport, and they pump bullets into dozens of guests and so on. It's pretty offensive, and yet that's the way in which it is portrayed. And although, yes, it's offensive, the outcry and anger just simply isn't there in the West. It's a political thing. It certainly doesn't go ahead and provoke what we then started to see. This is coming from the same paper, Saturday, February the 4th. Now we're looking at page 4. It's moved up into the news. It's also expanded its coverage. America backs Muslims over cartoons as thousands voice anger worldwide. In other words, America therefore tries to placate the Muslim people to go ahead and say that, it's the problem of actually publishing the cartoons. And it says, America sided with tens of thousands of Muslims who protested worldwide yesterday by cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad published to in European newspapers. In his first comment on the furore, the State Department said these cartoons are indeed offensive to the beliefs of Muslims. So that again, it's a case of trying to placate the ideas. Free speech, Labour cares more about the Muslim vote. It's 10 years since Tony Blair told me in an interview with Sunday Telegraph of the fascination with Pontius Pilate. Now, it's interesting that was actually kind of came out. It says, in an exploration of his personal beliefs, the Labour leader explained that he viewed Pilate as the archetypical politician caught on the horns of an age-old political dilemma. It is not always clear, even in retrospect, what is truth and what is right. Should we do what appears principled or what is politically expedient? And this is the heart and the core. This is the key that we find in all of these things. And we see this these concepts, and we see this constant placating of certain people's beliefs. Let's just turn over and just notice a few scriptures. If you'd notice over in Leviticus chapter 20, and this is something we have got to keep in mind as we read what's going on in the world and in the Western world, and we see how they're constantly kowtowing to forces and trying to, as it says, Mr. Blair is taken with Pontius Pilate that had this dilemma. What does he do? Does he do what's right or does he do what's expedient? And what's happening today is people are doing what is expedient. Why? Because there's no moral bedrock there anymore. The word of God that was once the bedrock that was used by the country has been dissipated. It's been destroyed. If we notice in chapter 20 of Leviticus, verse 25, it says, "You shall therefore put a difference between clean beast and unclean, and between clean fowls and clean, and you will not make your souls," that's your flesh, your breathing creature, "abominable by beast or fowl or any manner of living thing that creeps on the ground which I have separated from you as unclean." So this is the law of clean and unclean meats. But notice why. "And you shall be holy unto me, for I, the Eternal, am holy, and have separated or severed you from other people, that you should be mine." There was a distinction between the people that regarded this book as holy and other people. And this distinction was actually within our countries, within the Western world, within Britain, within America, within Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh. And it says, so it basically makes this distinction, and it even ties it in. The reason for keeping clean and unclean meats was to remind us that there is this distinction. And as we make a distinction, as we go around our normal daily life, this should be part of the reason why we, you know, eat clean food. Is that there is a distinction that we must remain clean, we must remain separate. We are not part of this mishmash, this political expediency that we find within the world. You find the same kind of thing over in Deuteronomy, notice, Deuteronomy chapter 4. It says in Deuteronomy 4, it says, verse 6, it says, "Keep therefore and do them," talking about the statutes and judgments and laws of God, the things that were written within this book. It says, "For this is your wisdom." This is what it makes the difference. This is what separates you out and gives you the wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations. So there is a distinction between what you have here and what is in the nations outside. And there is a distinction between what we have within this book and what the Muslims have within the Quran. A great distinction. And the wisdom within this book should make a distinction within this nation, but it's not doing so. And within America, but it's not doing so. It's trying to make a multicultural statement, and it is it views what's going on almost like Pontius Pilate. And it's, what do you do? Do you do what is right, or do you do what is expedient? And they will always go towards the expedient instead of what is right, because they don't have the moral basis anymore. And this is what we were witnessing within the country. And we've got to make sure that we, within the church, as we watch the news, as we see these things going on, this thing about Mugabe to ask the whites back in the land grab U-turn. I mean, he is actually asking the whites to come back and take over, because he can see the chaos that the entire country is in, and yet the fundamental changes have not been made. The fundamental problems that which are there, the fact that he will take over the land at the moment's notice, if it becomes politically expedient for him again, he hasn't changed one whit. All he's witnessing is the destruction of the country. And this idea of racism and how it's we shouldn't be racist. We shouldn't go ahead and just look upon somebody as inferior because of their race. But there is a distinction, and the distinction are these words. And Mugabe is really hot under the collar about the idea that the whites should have a place within the world by right, by birth, by the fact that they happen to be this particular nation. And yet that's the way it seems to, the Bible describes. I remember one time in Nigeria, we were going around a slave museum. I think I've given this incident before. But we were going around this slave museum in Nigeria. And I remember when we first went in there, the person who was going to show us round looked at myself and my wife, because we were the only whites in the whole group that was going to go around. And you could see his face completely changed, his jaw dropped, as if to say, "Now what am I going to do?" And he obviously made the decision to just go ahead and give the presentation as he would normally give it, and he did. And he went through this entire museum talking about how these evil whites were constantly coming in and enslaving these poor blacks, and it was a pure, total white and black issue, if I can put it that way. It was nothing else, purely race. And eventually we went to, and I thought, if this had been the West, if somebody even dared to give this kind of diatribe within say our country, the race relations would have had him no messing at all. You know, just none. I mean, there's no way that he could go ahead and do that. But he was doing this day in, day out to school children that were going around and seeing these exhibits. And the interesting thing is that we've got this kind of political expediency. There's an article here by the Church of England who apologizes for the slave trade. I can't find it straight off, but anyway, he's apologizing for the slave trade. Now, the thing that really got to me, and finally I had had enough by the time we'd gone through most of that, the fact that the lights kept going off as well because the electricity supply was so abominable within the country, and they were going around by torchlight showing these exhibits because the electricity wouldn't work. And it got to a particular point. I said, look, they were showing us the money, the actual ingots that were there, that were in the this kind of display. And I said, excuse me, can I ask a question? Who was the money actually paid to? And he said, I don't understand. I said, well, look, they were buying slaves. And who was the money paid to? He said, well, the chiefs. I said, well, so it wasn't the whites who enslaved the people. It was the chiefs. And the chiefs enslaved their own people and sold them to the whites. Isn't that right? And he literally turned and ran. He turned and ran. He had no explanation. He could give nothing in reply at all. Because it's clear. They were taking ingots down to pay for slaves. And the people that were enslaving the people were the chiefs. They weren't the whites at all. Yes, they would go ahead and have raiding parties and so on. Yes, it was all, they'd sometimes pay it to Arabs, who also were involved in the trade. But the idea that the whites enslaved the blacks is wrong. It was a slave trade that was engaged in by the people, by the actual people themselves. And it was the same kind of thing that we had when we used to ship convicts across to Australia. The same things exactly. They would get rid of the troublemakers by selling them to the whites and make some money out of it in the process, who would be taken across to the West Indies. And so there's this politically correct idea, this idea that we see today in so many, many cases of do you do what is right or do you do what is politically expedient? And we constantly see this political expediency because the moral basis has gone from the country. If you turn over to Micah chapter 4, there's something we are going to have to really understand. We can find Micah, there we go. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah. Micah chapter 4. Something we need to understand when we're coming into the millennium, and the value that we have got within this book. You know, Queen Victoria, when she was asked what's the secret of England's greatness, asked for a Bible to be brought, and this was an Indian prince, somebody from India, one of the princes from India, came over to the UK, asked Queen Victoria, what's the secret of the greatness of England? I mean, here's this tin pot nation sitting on the outside of Europe. Why should it become the greatest power that the world has ever seen, certainly at that time, and if not ever? But here in Micah chapter 4, it says that, well, in this section, verse 3, and he shall judge among many people, rebuke strong nations afar off, and they will beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks, and nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. Now why? What's actually happening here? We're here seeing the return of Christ. We're seeing the implementation of a government based on this word. And the things that we are learning today within the church are based on this word. But they shall sit, every man under his vine and his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the eternal host has spoken it. It's the word of God that's spoken that thing, and the word of God will bring it about, and the wisdom that is built within that word is what is given to us, and what was actually given to Britain and America as Ephraim and Manasseh, and yet they've now discarded it, and they're going, the blind's leading the blind. You get this political expediency within the news. But notice what it says. For all people will walk everyone in the name of his God. In other words, all people may go out and they'll walk everyone in the name of their God. Currently, that's what's happening. The Muslims are walking in the name of their God. Mugabe is walking in the name of his God, which is atheism. You know, everybody, in every corner you'll find everybody walking in the name of their God. But it says, we will walk in the name of the Eternal, our God, forever and ever. In other words, this will be a kingdom that will not be removed. It'll be established. And this is why the people of God today, it's so vitally important that we go back to the foundation, that we get onto that foundation, and we don't go ahead and get off it. Because the foundation that we have is a moral one. It's a moral one that the world itself has lost, and we see the chaos within the news being the result of it. So I just thought I'd bring that, just really making a comment on the major story that seems to be breaking around us today, this story of these cartoons, and just showing what lies really behind it and what we need to be looking at as we look at the news today in the church.